Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Welcome to Murder Mile. Today, I'm standing on Greek Street in Soho W1. A few doors south of William Creasy's deadly dose of syphilis. A few doors west of Susan Latany's Stockholm Syndrome. A few doors up from Joe Ganane's drug-fueled murder spree. And a few steps from the hobo tax collector. Coming soon to Murder Mile. At 23 Greek Street, currently stands a five-story office block. With the shell of the pleasant lady Zhang Bing's Chinese street food stall below, and the stench of avocados and falafel coming from the production companies above. And with a horrible pebble-dash facade, like a statue's been sick. A set of nasty white windows, reminiscent of a 1980s comprehensive. And its graffiti-covered wall, reeking of wee-wee. This building is so ugly. It looks like an architect sat on a box of Meccano and thought, yeah, that'll do. Back in 1904, at 23 Greek Street stood a provision shop called Dearden's, ran by the Dearden family. And above, in a modest three-story terrace, was their home, with space for several lodgers. On Sunday the 31st of July 1904, at roughly 12:30 a.m, a fight broke out near the doorway of 23 Greek Street between two young men, Edward Devaney and Raphael Ciccolino. Amidst a melee of fists and drunken yells, in a brawl which risked one man's execution and another man's death. Although its many witnesses spoke of the shouts that they heard and the blows they had seen, it seems strange that no one saw the truth. My name is Michael. I'm your tour guide, and this is Murder Mile. Episode 231, The Good Samaritans. Drinking and fighting are nightly staples of most cities. As once the pubs are shut, a puke of insensible idiots, incapable of rational thought after they've had a whole pint of happy juice, grunt like flatulent pigs as their lonely brain cells command sovereign-ringed fists to pummel another Neanderthal's head. Some may say, good riddance to these dregs of society. But sometimes, there can be more to a fight than at first glance. The night of Saturday the 30th of July 1904 was a hot one. A steam rose from a recent downpour on the streets. And with the air sticky, it seemed like the only way to quell the city's temper was by drinking. 25-year-old Edward Thomas Devaney was a superintendent at the Hippodrome in Leicester Square. Holding down a steady job and living in a one-room lodging on New Compton Street, he had no real plans for the future, as he was all about Saturday nights out with his pals, a few pints, and a fight. Described as a ne'er-do-well, a yob, an oaf, and a lout, he wasn't best blessed with brains, and once he'd got a few pints inside of him, he didn't care who got hurt, as it was all about his pride and his fun. With a conviction for stealing a purse and a watch, he served 8 months hard labour. Having not learned his lesson, he stole another watch and served another 12 months. And with 12 more months for more theft, and 12 more months for the assault of a policeman, he would spend 4 of his 7 adult years in prison. And having shat his whole life away, he was unlikely to deviate from a path of theft, drink, and violence. But then again, morons will always be morons. Having finished his shift at the Hippodrome, Edward did as he always did and headed into Soho for a few pints with his pals. Arthur Langley, Edward Lynch, and his brother-in-law, James Albert Lee. As a 32-year-old labourer with scars, tattoos, and cut knuckles, Arthur Langley had served 9 years plus for theft, burglary, and assault. As for the other two, Edward Lynch was a local tailor who, being red-faced and a little bit too loud, was prone to brawling but rarely got into any trouble. And James Lee, who was a sober man, often stood in the background, as tall and thin as a beanpole. Finishing his shift at the Hippodrome at 11:30 p.m, Edward met up in a pub on Shaftesbury Avenue with Edward Lynch, Arthur Langley and James Lee, where it is said he swigged back 3 pints of beer until the pub called last orders had just gone midnight. Booted out of this beverage shop, and almost certainly singing a dirty little ditty about an impressively bosom girl called Sally, the lads headed into Soho. And for reasons which were never fully explained, they slunk to 23 Greek Street, where one of the Hippodrome supers called Freddie Hopkins lodged. With a drunken bravado echoing across the deserted street, although the shop was shut and the lights in the lodging above were out, Edward banged hard and rang the bell incessantly, waking more Dearden with a start. The landlord's 18-year-old daughter said she heard singing and banging, men shouting, and what sounded like something being smashed. And with their raucous braying unsettling the sleeping children, Maud stormed downstairs, her little sister cowering behind her. Among the dark of the hallway, as a light burst in from outside, owing to a broken front door hanging off of its hinges, all she saw were the sinister silhouettes of 3 men. Devaney, Lynch, and Langley. As a petite young woman, wearing just her nightdress, she should have been scared. But being so used to their obnoxiousness, all she saw was a bunch of slurring, intoxicated assholes, staggering around like their hips were made of jelly, and demanding, "Where's Hopkins? Where's that fat bastard got to?" With this being her home, Maud ushered these 3 mashed menaces out, hissing, "You'll have to go. He's asleep. Come back tomorrow. And with the beanpole frame of James Lee, as motionless and vague as ever, and almost silently blending in with the street lamps, as he slowly shepherded the rear two outside.
Come on, lads. Home time, I think.
At that point, Edward was still trying to get in. When questioned by the police, Edward Devaney said,
"We rang the bell, but did nothing more to get in. Miss Dearden came down. I asked for Hopkins. And that's it."
But as the lads congregated outside of 23 Greek Street, a dark and sinister stranger approached. As Freddie Hopkins peered from his window, too cowardly to confront the commotion below, he'd tell the court,
"I saw a foreign man come round the corner."
Stocky like a bulldog, strutting like a peacock, and as stiff as a seething cobra ready to strike. Dressed entirely in black, the dark Italian spat furiously. Having never seen him before, the lads had no idea what he wanted. As in an indecipherable gibberish, the Italian shoved Edward hard.
"Ew, what's he saying?
Nah, fuck off, mate. Leave it out. I don't fucking know who he is.
What's his name?
What? Are you mad or something? Must be a nutter. Bloody high tide."
But with his foreigner's fists balled up like the hands of two sledgehammers, spoiling for a fight, as James ushered Lynch and Langley across the street to safety, Edward and the foreigner got stuck in, knocking seven shades of shit out of each other. As I say, morons will always be morons. Their fisticuffs only lasted a minute at best, maybe two. And with both men pummeling each other as much as the other, nobody won, nobody lost. Face was saved. And with James separating the two, they both went about their ways, shouting obscenities from an ever-increasing distance.
"Vaffanculo! Fuck you!"
And as they walked in different directions, no doubt regaling their pals with a bullshit version of their pathetic little spat. For Edward, although fuming, he'd had a good night, a few pints, and a fight. It had begun as quickly as it ended. Or at least, that's what they thought. Having walked up Greek Street, Edward recalled,
"After 80 yards, I said I was going home, and I went back down towards Old Compton,"
as he lived on New Compton Street. But as they approached the corner, there he was. The foreigner, right outside of 23 Greek Street. With the Italian facing the other way, and Edward still fuming. Instead of letting it be, being nothing more than a drunken lout, he'd state,
"I got up to him, and I struck him with my fist two or three times."
As he often did, James tried to break up the fight, shouting,
"Don't be a fool, come away."
But Edward was in too deep. Punching fast and hard, although Edward had the upper hand, being a few inches taller, all it took was a single mistake for his life to change forever. As having put the wrong foot in the wrong place at the wrong time, as he tripped over a curbstone,
"I slipped to the ground, and next, he was on top of me.
With the Italian raining down punches, and Edward giving sharp thumps to the gut, the two men pounded on, their bleeding fists slamming into each other's bodies as James tried to split them apart. As a melee of flying limbs and furious grunts, it was impossible for any witness on this partially lit street to see what had happened. As some saw fists, others only saw feet. Some said several men were at it, whereas others said it was just the two. And although several witnesses were heard to cry, "Don't to him," and "No blades, come on, fair play," some saw a knife being pulled, whereas others saw nothing. Rising to his feet and fearing retaliations from the angry men who surrounded him, as the Italian fled, Lynch recalled,
"Devaney got off the ground and went after him."
Running down Ocompton Street,
"Devaney overtook him and struck him once in the face."
But hearing a cry of police help from one of the eyewitnesses, as the Italian headed west, the lads headed east. Bleeding from a swelling eye, spitting bloodied spittle, and limping ever more profusely as he staggered down Charing Cross Road. With his adrenaline still pumping, it was only as he took a moment to catch his breath that Edward realized that he'd been stabbed. With blood over his hands and pooling down his legs in a never-ending torrent, with a knife wound to his right buttock, but also his groin, a soft plateau of flesh containing vital arteries and veins, they caught a cab and immediately sped to Charing Cross Hospital. Admitted as a casualty, and given the very best available treatment for his wounds, a few hours later, 25-year-old Edward Thomas Devaney was discharged from hospital and made a full recovery. Although he had two knife wounds, one an inch long to the right buttock and the other in the lower part of his abdomen, having only punctured the skin, these superficial wounds were stitched and dressed, and with no long-term damage to his vital organs, Edward left and went about his day. The fight had been bloody and brutal, but no one had died. At least not yet. Like Edward, he didn't know he'd been stabbed. But seeing him stumble away from a raging crowd on Greek Street, a taxi driver drove him straight to Charing Cross Hospital. With a seemingly superficial wound to his abdomen, it was stitched and bandaged. But as he drifted in and out of consciousness, with the blade having punctured his intestines, the tall, thin frame of the patient grew paler and sicker. As his own guts had begun to poison him, knowing he was unlikely to ever recover, the doctor said,
"You know you're going to die."
And having mumbled,
"Yes."
A few minutes later, 22-year-old James Lee was dead. He hadn't drank, he hadn't argued, he hadn't fought. And being a quiet, sober man, this good Samaritan had simply stepped in to break up a fight. And yet the blade meant for Edward had ended his life. That night, in a dingy little lodging at 14 Arthur Street in West Brompton, James's murderer returned. As the dark foreigner entered this gloomy hovel, pulling from his bloodied pocket a bone-handled clasp knife, before stashing the evidence in his drawer, he wiped the blade clean with a rag and a sharpener. Only this was not a callous killer, impassive, having taken a life. This was a man in panic. 32-year-old Italian Raphael Ciccolino was so perturbed by his own actions that when his landlady, Rosina Martin, came to deliver his breakfast in the morning, she would state, "The door was shut, the room was empty, and the bed was dirty as if somebody with muddy clothes had lain on it. And someone had been sick." Those who knew him said that Raphael wasn't an uncouth lout, but a quiet and reserved gentleman who was sober, peaceful, and was no bother to anyone. The next morning, being too terrified to flee, but also too poor not to earn, Raphael returned to his job as a kitchen porter at the French Club on Lyle Street. Having misplaced his hat, although his tatty waistcoat now sported a new hole and several fresh stains which no one knew was blood, what made the cooks laugh was his black eye. As apparently, this stout little man had got into a fight.
"Who gave you this then? Your missus?"
"Men didn't. Englishmen."
"Ah, yeah, right. And how many we talking?"
"Six, maybe 10."
"Ha, 6 he says. Maybe 10. My speckled ass."
He worked his shift as best he could, washing dishes with shaking hands and getting ribbed about his fight. But with his description circulated across Soho, it was only a matter of time until he was caught. On the morning of Monday, the 1st of August, Raphael Ciccolino was arrested at the French Club, having been pointed out by the cowardly Freddie Hopkins. Taken to Vine Street Police Station, with Detective Inspector Drew stating,
"I am charging you with stabbing two men in Greek Street, one of whom who has since died."
But barely able to converse in broken English, Raphael looked lost. And although it didn't take an interpreter, who would later arrive to translate,
"No fight, me no knife,"
his defense was never going to be easy, as the inspector replied,
"Sorry, mate, I don't speak French."
So many details would be lost in translation. And yet, ironically, that was how the fight had begun. The evidence against Raphael was overwhelming. Examined by Dr. Mitchell, with extensive bruises to his jaw, nose, legs, knees, and the back of his head, the police surgeon would state,
"He had been very badly mauled."
And although clearly shocked at how deadly this brawl had been, although he shook, and he cried, and he repeatedly vomited, there was no denying that, regardless of how remorseful he was now, that fight had led to a man's death. In his lodging, the police found the knife hidden in a drawer, with a reddish-brown film on the blade, from where he had wiped it clean. Although an attempt to destroy the evidence was seen by the police, the bloodied speckles which remained. Lay the black fluff, matching his pocket's lining, and a sprinkling of tobacco leaves, identical to the brand that he smoked. Back at Vine Street Police Station, against a lineup of 10 stocky men of Italian appearance, Raphael was picked out by Edward Devaney, his victim and the brother-in-law of the deceased. Edward's boozy pals, Arthur Langley and Edward Lynch, Freddie Hopkins the coward, and Maud Dearden of 23 Greek Street. Question with an interpreter present. Although he gave a piecemeal statement in a mix of excitable Italian and broken English, repeatedly asserting,
"I had no knife, only my hands. Everyone see that?"
Even though no one could recall seeing a knife, not even Edward, it didn't help that he'd lied. Charged with the wounding of Edward Devaney and the willful murder of James Lee, as two men who he didn't know, who he had never met until that moment, the impact of his actions would be so overwhelming that on two occasions, as he sat in his prison cell, Raphael would attempt to take his own life. Using whatever he could find. In the first instance, he ripped off the buttons off his jacket and made from highly toxic lead and decorated with lethal levels of an arsenic-based paint. He swallowed them. In the second instance, having survived owing to quick-witted officers, he strangled himself using his own coat sleeves. And running fast, he headed headfirst into the cell stone wall until he fell unconscious. Suffering little more than bruises, cuts, and a mild concussion, his suicide attempts would prove futile. But what had driven this quiet little man to stab a stranger he didn't know? The night of Saturday the 30th of July 1904 was a hot one. A steam rose from a recent downpour on the street, and with the air sticky, it seemed like the only way to quell the city's temper was by drinking. But not for Raphael. Being a sober man, although he was sat in the Swiss Hotel on Old Compton Street, with Joseph Berger, a cook from the French Club, there was no argument to rile his temper, and no excessive drink to cloud his judgment. As having supped a small wine, he left the pub at 12:30 a.m. His plan was to head off home to bed after a 14-hour shift. He was alone, as his pal had said goodbye. He was walking west to get his bus. In his pocket, he carried a tin of tobacco, because he smoked, and a bone-handled knife. As being a kitchen porter and often a cook, many men in his line of work carried the tools of their trade. And he only stopped because he heard a scream. Turning off Old Compton Street and onto Greek Street, to the side of the provisions shop, he saw the petite frame of 18-year-old Maud, her front door hanging off its hinges, her little sister cowering behind her, and surrounded by drunken louts. No one was coming to her aid, not even the cowardly Freddie Hopkins. Raised well, unlike others who would have walked by. Although he wasn't a brawler, Raphael came to this lone woman's aid, and rightly reprimanded Edward, who was trying to force his way back in. Raphael was just a stranger, but he was the good Samaritan that Maud needed in her moment of fear. Only with no one having a clue what he was saying.
Dude, what's he saying? Nah, fuck off, mate, but how? I don't fucking know who he is. Must be a nutjob in war. Bloody high time.
Raphael would state,
I saw a man strike a woman. I spoke to him, but he did not understand me.
And there sits the irony, as at that moment, there wasn't one good Samaritan, but two. As with both Raphael Ciccolino and James Lee, trying to stop Edward and to protect Maud, these two quiet men had stepped in where others hadn't. But unable to understand the other, details were lost in translation. Initially fleeing as he was scared, the only reason Raphael returned to 23 Greek Street was because he was worried about Maud. Having crossed paths, the only reason James was stabbed was because he was protecting Edward. And the only reason that Raphael pulled a knife was because he was fearing for his life, as the drunken lout called Edward Devaney had sunk a few pints and was spoiling for a fight. On the 3rd of August 1904, before Judge Denham, 32-year-old Raphael Ciccolino was tried at the Old Bailey on the charge of malicious wounding and murder. From the witness box and through a translator, he would claim he was set upon by Edward, but also by Lynch, Langley, and later attacked by James Lee, and that, as he hadn't got a knife in his possession, he defended himself with his fists. Unable to decide who was telling the truth, as the evidence confirmed that someone had stabbed both men, as none of the witnesses had conclusively seen the knife, and even Edward would state, I cannot say for certain who stabbed him. With the defense claiming provocation, a jury took 10 minutes to find him guilty of murder. Sentenced on the 15th of September, Raphael Ciccolino was given 8 years penal servitude. And with Edward seen as one of the victims, no charges of assault, intimidation, criminal damage, or even violence were brought against him. And never changing his ways, he continued living his life as a drunken oaf, who stole to suit his needs, who terrorized young girls to make himself feel big, and as a loser who got into pathetic fights with strangers over nothing, all because his life was worthless. James Lee was buried in Westminster, having only lived 22 years of his young life. Raphael Ciccolino served his sentence, and he returned to his family in Italy. And although they had hardly met, these were two good Samaritans who'd risked their lives for a stranger.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
What's that? That was fine. That was fine. Big stretch. What time is it? Do this. Go on a walk, get to the coffee shop for about 2, have a decaf soy latte. Should be fine. How's everyone doing? Are we all good? Welcome to Extra Mile, unscripted, unedited bit, blah, 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 blah. See, that would be edited out, but not today. Not today, not any day. Nothing. Bum fluff. There we go. That would be edited out. Burp. That would be edited out. Brilliant. But it's not. It's going to stay in. Because this is the unscripted, unedited bit. Therefore, if there's mistakes that happen in this bit, it's just like regular. I always find it fascinating when people message me going, "In Extra Mile, you made a mistake." It's like, that's the whole point. If I make a mistake in Extra Mile, it stays. It just stays. That's the whole point. I think I'm going to open up some windows. This might be the last hot day for our excuse of a summer. It's very nice outside. It's very pleasant. I'm just going to open up the window. I removed your little hat. Your hat's going to go back into its little box. Just going to open up. Take away the pillows, which act as kind of protection behind the curtains. You can hear an annoying helicopter going by. I'm not going to have a shout at the crappy little pathetic businessmen flying around in their little aircraft. Done that, can't be arsed with them today. It's a nice day. It's just a nice day to go outside and have fun and etc. Walked by some nice little horses the other day. There's three little kind of chestnut, dark red chestnut coloured horses having a nice little... They're nice, they're very calm. You can go up to them and say hello to them and they're very nice. I think because they're behind a nice wire fence. Whereas arseholes who walk their dogs and don't have their dogs on the lead, even though the sign says keep your dog on the lead because there's wildlife around, there's cattle and sheep, and you get the arseholes go, "Oh, my dog's fine, it's all right, he's just having fun, he's just chasing them, it's what he does, he's just having a bit of a giggle, he's not going to do anything wrong." Those arseholes. They're the same arseholes, aren't they, who let their kids run around after pigeons and then their kids try and stomp the pigeons. They go, "Oh, they're just having fun, no, just leave them alone." I've got to go back into the coffee shop in a bit, which is always full of little bastards. There's one little bastard that I particularly hate, and his mum doesn't give a shit at all. It's like she sits there yakking away with her friend. Like the only part of her that gets any effing exercise is her gob, and it doesn't shut up all day. But her child, her eyes don't keep an eye on the child. The child is running around a coffee shop where people are carrying boiling liquids, and he's not watching where he's going because he's a fucking idiot, and he's running around, he's pushing this little stool around and running around and falling, and his mum doesn't give a shit. Those people really pissed me off. Really pissed me off. I was hoping I wouldn't have a grumble, but I, you know me, I have to have a grumble. What else is going on? I'm still on my diet. Still doing well. Diet's still going well. Haven't had a cake in a long while. I had a treat cake for my 6-year anniversary of Murder Mile. But that was it. That was it. I'm kind of off the booze as well. Not really eating chocolate. Not really. Pretty much off chocolate. And fizzy pops. And booze and breads and cakes and biscuits and all that. Just trying to be good now. Just trying to be good. It's good because I can have stuff now. I can have, like, I can't remember whether I mentioned this. It was a couple of weeks ago and I'd had a really busy night. And I got in about midnight and I thought, it's too late to make something. Pizza place is open, I'll have a pizza. So I went in and I bought a pizza. And I was just like, I'll have that one. Yeah, that's all good. Yeah, paid like 10, 15 quid. And it was a pizza that was probably as big as my table. So it's about 2 feet by 2 feet. And I thought, oh, I'll have that. And I'll have some for breakfast in the morning. And while I was sitting there watching Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares, I ate the whole bloody pizza. And I thought, oh, I'm going to hurt tomorrow. I'm really going to hurt because my body's not used to processed stuff. It's not used to cheese. It's not used to bread. I don't even think my body knew what it was. I think it just digested it immediately. So that was good. That was very good. So there you go, there's some more waffly chit-chat. What else is going on? I think, yeah, last day before it pisses down. I think we've got 3 days of pissing down in a bit, so there we go. But I'm just knuckling down at the moment. I'm just knuckling down to get all these episodes done. So I can't remember. I can't remember when this episode goes out. I think this goes out. When does it go out? Let me have a look at my notes. Bear with. When does this episode go out? See, you'll know because you'll just be looking at your watch. But I'm weeks ahead. So let's see where we are. This episode goes out on. See, I had no idea where I am at the moment. The 2nd of November. There we go. Unless obviously you're listening to this in the past, then you know, who really cares? But today is the 10th of October. So yeah, I'm about 3 weeks ahead already. And I'm going to power ahead with these because I've already kind of drafted out the final three episodes. I've got 3 more to finish researching, but I know what those cases are and I've done a bulk of it already. I've prepped next week's episode, which is good. So, yeah, my plan is to get everything done, hopefully by the middle of November, so then I can take a tiny little bit of time off and relax a bit. And then December, get into the archives and start finding some new stuff. So that's what I want to do. All exciting. Got loads of projects going on as well, so I want to make sure I've got time for that. A big thank you to new Patreon subscribers who are James Farver, Betty Lou, and the Inquisitor. The Inquisitor! So thank you, James. Thank you, Betty. Thank you, The. Because The will be your first name. So there we go. So thank you, everyone. Thank you for becoming Patreon supporters. Don't forget, you can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $3 a month, which is £2 in real money. Also, there's a trial on there. So you can click a trial button. So you can have a look around. You can explore everything within your tier and have a look at all the old stuff that's on there for about a week. And then at the end of the week, it'll say, do you want to continue doing this? And then you can go yes or no. So, it's worth doing the little trial because it's all free. Let's do some quiz questions. Then we'll I didn't stuff this up like I did last week and forgot to add in the stuff for Extra Mile. I remembered this time. So let's do the quiz questions. Then we'll do the extra stuff. So question number one. What job did Edward do? Don't forget, I haven't edited this episode yet, so some of these questions might not appear in the episode. Question two. What job did James do? Question number three. How many years out of 7 had Edward spent in prison? Question number four. What job did Edward Lynch do? Question number five. How many pints do we know that Edward Devaney drank that night? Question number six. How did Edward describe Freddie Hopkins? Question number 7, what hospital were Edward and James taken to? Question number 8, what street did Raphael live on? Question number 9, what was the name of Raphael's landlady? And question number 10, what language did the inspector think the Italian spoke? Great bit of detective work there. Well done. So let's dive into some stuff in here. Raphael Ciccolino, 32 years old, described as short, stout, a dark man with a moustache who speaks very little English. People have said he was quiet and reserved, a gentleman who would always come to a lady's aid. His landlady described him as quiet, peaceable, I don't think people use the word peaceable anymore, and a regular man who pays his rent in a regular way. So by and large, people seem to like him. In his room, he got a small room in an undisclosed place. There we go. I'm learning not to give up the quiz questions. He'd been there for about 2 years. It was a small back room on the ground floor, and there was a set of cooking utensils in there, and the knife had come from that drawer. But also they were the knives that he sometimes used when he's not a kitchen porter, and he'd sometimes get called in to be not a chef, but kind of a bit of a cook. So he had knives dotted around, but, you know, they were all useful things. It's not like he was carrying a knife because, oh, I'm a gangster. That night, he went out with Joseph Valentine Berger, a Belgian, who lived one street away on Church Street. That's now called Romilly Street. They knew each other well because they worked at the French Club on Lyle Street. Worked together, he said. We left the club at about 11 p.m. We went down to Compton Street, as people call it. It's actually Old Compton Street. And then they went for a drink. They went to the Swiss Hotel on Old Compton Street. That's now known as Compton's. And then at about 12:30, they separated. They had a little drink together, and then they buggered off. Don't forget, this is there was kind of later closing hours. Then you could kind of close when you needed to, really. But what was I going to say? I can't remember what I was going to say. There we go. Maybe it'll come back to me. Freddie Hopkins, full name Frederick Harry Hopkins. We know that he worked with Edward at the Hippodrome. We know that he was one of the lodgers at 23 Greek Street, and that's the reason why Edward and his pals were going there. But we don't know why they went there. It's never explained. They said they urgently needed to see Frederick, or Freddy, as he was called, but it was never explained why. Maud Rebecca Dearden was the 18-year-old daughter. Her parents ran the provision shop on the ground floor of 23 Greek Street. She also worked there. They were the landlords of the house above, and they had let lodgers living in there. Freddie Hopkins had been there for about 12 months. She went to bed about 11:30 p.m. and she put the kids to bed. She then, about an hour later, said she heard the street door being forced open. She called out and said, "Who is there?" She heard singing. She went downstairs. Her little sister followed her. And in a passageway, she found the door open and four men there. Now, I didn't put this in the story because it throws it off. But she said there was Devaney, Lynch, Langley, and someone called Morecambe. Now, we don't know who Morecambe is. It may have been that she mistook James Lee for Morecambe. But in an earlier account on this, I took this out as well, because sometimes if there's things that just don't make sense, it doesn't make sense to put them in because it'll just throw you off. So Edward Devaney said that the other man there was a man called Gale, and he doesn't mention James Lee, his brother-in-law, so we don't know who Gale is. So this makes it more complicated. There's someone called Morecambe who no one knows, someone called Gale who no one knows, and no mention of Lee, even though Lee is there, James Lee. So that's what makes it really confusing. So I took that out of the episode because it just confuses things. Devaney said, "We rang the bell but did nothing more to get in. Miss Dearden came down. I asked for Hopkins and she stopped me going upstairs. I did not come into contact with her," which we know is bullshit because he didn't just ring the doorbell. He forced down the door. The door was hanging off its hinges. He was ringing the doorbell. He made his way in. they tried to get some of the guys outside, but he wanted to force his way back in, and he was having a bit of a contretemps with Maud. So Arthur Langley said he would admit that. He said while Devaney was trying to force his way into the shop. Obviously, it's around this point that Raphael saw that bit. So he didn't see the start of it. He didn't see them breaking in. He just heard her scream and a gang of men outside the house, and then Edward Devaney, confronting her, trying to get in. So he doesn't know what's going on, but he knows that he has to do something about it. The fight later on. So Edward would say, the prisoner, that's Raphael, ran away and I ran after him. He ran across Compton Street to Barnes' shop in Greek Street. My two friends were close behind. I got up to the prisoner and struck him with my fist two or three times, not more. He retaliated. My friends got me away and said, don't be foolish, come away. Spoken like a true arsehole, isn't he? He's all about making sure the details are in there, about how many punches I got in. Yeah, I got in at least three or four punches, because I'm a legend. I am a legend. You're not a legend, you're fucking bellend, is what you are. Unfortunately, you see this in Soho and most places all the time, where all the bellends come out after they've had a couple of beers, and they all want it. They all like to believe, oh, I'm a bit tasty. So that's why... when I used to do my walking tours, I'd always do them on a Sunday morning, because Sunday mornings, not too bad. You don't get, like, some people say, oh, can we do one on Saturday nights? And they'd have to pay me well for that, because I hated Saturday nights, because it's just full of pissheads, absolute arseholes who want to be helpful and see something and go, oh, that looks like fun. I'm gonna join in as well. Oh, why are you getting upset, mate? Why are you getting upset? I'm just joining in. I'm just having a bit of a giggle. You'll get those pricks doing that who are really fucking annoying because they're drunk. There's nothing you can do about it. You've got to be polite, even though really what you want to say is go fuck yourself. But yeah. So I used to do it on Sunday mornings, which is fine. The only problem with that is you get the crack addicts. A man has just gone past in a kayak, and he has a little cockapoo on the front of his kayak. The things you see every day. Anyway, so that's yes. So yeah, Saturday nights in Soho, lots of fighting going on. Let's see where we are. Edward Lynch would say, we returned to go home. We passed the prisoner. He and Devaney recognised each other. Devaney said, here he is, and made towards him as if the fight was going to commence again. He slipped and fell backwards like a turd. And the deceased appeared on the scene, so that's James, and looked as if he was going to pick Devaney up. The prisoner was in a stooping position over Devaney. I see no actual blows struck because the deceased hid my view. He was also stooping over Devaney. I saw no more of the deceased. There were independent witnesses there. One of the witnesses was heard to cry, don't to him. To him means kind of stab him. And there was another one, Amy Richmond of 59 New Compton Street. She was not too far away at that point. She said, after the deceased reached the foreigner, see, that's why I call him the foreigner, the dark foreigner, all that in here, because that's the way everyone is kind of regarding him in this. And what I wanted to do was try and get across the idea of how it was in that kind of era, how it was like... Because he's Italian, because he's a foreigner. He's a foreigner, isn't he? He's a foreigner, therefore he's suspect, isn't he? Yeah, they're all criminals, aren't they? They're all bloody criminals, a whole lot of them. I wanted to get across that kind of mentality in here, that he can't be trusted because he's a bloody foreigner, isn't he? You can't trust him. You don't even know what they're saying. It's probably criminal stuff, isn't it? They're all criminals. They all come over here, do stealing, don't they? All stealing, all criminals. Why don't they fuck off back? It's like reading the Daily Mail, isn't it? Or watching GB News. There you go. If you're a journalist, you know if your career's gone to shit if you're hosting on GB News. Even Coot Outside agrees with me. I have a friend who was a host on GB News. That's all I have to say about that. So she said,
I was trying to listen to an episode of Murder Mile and he started waffling on about how he hates the Daily Mail and GB News. I think it's a good news organisation. Therefore, I'm going to give him 1 star. I wanted to give him no stars, but iTunes won't let me.
There you go. Amy Richmond said, she said, after the deceased reached the foreigner, the deceased seemed to bend forward and the foreigner immediately ran away down Wardour Street. So that's west. When Devaney fell and the deceased ran up, Edith Rose said, Edith Rose said, one dog, one bone, don't all hit the man. I mean, maybe she was watching a porno, I don't know. That seems to me, I think what she's trying to say is that there seemed to be a bit of a melee going on with the other Edward and Arthur in there. They seem to say that they weren't doing any fighting. Maybe they weren't, or maybe they were trying to stop it and getting involved and everyone thought it was a bit of a melee, or maybe people just got confused. We don't know. She seems to be saying, you know, one dog, one bone, i.e., you know, just two of you fight. You don't all need to be hitting the Italian man. She said that before the deceased got up to Devaney, a man who I think was Lynch, though I'm not sure, replied to her, "They shall not use knives." I do not know what made Lynch say that. They were only flatting, i.e., punching each other and slapping each other with their hands. Devaney was on the ground and the deceased was facing the prisoner. What else was there? We'll do Raphael's statement. Obviously, you can appreciate this is a statement which has come through. He's got very, very broken English, so not very good English at all. It has gone through a translator, but the translator was an officer. I think his name was Officer Curry, who worked at the police station. So he wasn't a professional translator. So we're having to rely on the level of his interpretation of what Raphael was saying. So that's why this is kind of hard. So the statement, which is obviously not in Raphael's words, but it's in a translated version of what Raphael said to Sergeant Curry, and Curry translated it in his from Italian to English. It said, no, I have not killed the man. I have no knives. I used only my hands. There were 10 men on top of me. I saw they were English and ran away. I saw some Englishmen knocking a woman about and went and spoke to them about it. When one man struck me in the eye and another in the hip, I then ran home at once after falling down twice. I do not know even the neighbourhood. I mean, that's not true at all. He does know the neighbourhood. I go to work at 9 in the morning and go home at 11 at night. What else we got? When asked, he said, how can I do that? I never had a knife. I never carry a knife. The officer said, I searched him and found no weapon. That's because the weapon was actually in his flat. But he did occasionally carry a knife. Why? Because he's a chef. Of course he carries a knife. It'd be like saying you're a workman and you're not carrying a screwdriver or a hammer. You know, it just doesn't make sense at all. Dr. Ludwig Freiberger was one of the pathologists. He looked at the knife and said it was clear that it had been wiped clean. Well, not wiped clean, but it'd been wiped with a rag. It wasn't fully clean. And then he'd been rubbing it on a sharpening stone. So he was trying to get rid of... whether he was trying to clean away the blood, we don't know, or whether he was planning to use it the next day because he is a chef, we don't know. So maybe he was, even though he did leave it in the drawer. They said, I found reddish-brown stains on it, which had firmly adhered to the steel. I also found in the space left for the point of the blade some black stuff, which was the tobacco, rubbed from the lining of the pocket and some tobacco leaves. I also came to the conclusion that the film had been occasioned by mammal blood. So we're at an era here where they can determine the difference between mammal blood and non-mammal blood. but they can't really do much more than that, so they can't tell blood group at this point. He also said that on the knife were some large cells as formed the covering of a skin, and these were definitely human epithelial
epithelium
cells. There you go, human skin cells. Also on his jacket as well. So James had a wound to his jacket as well. So James is wearing a black serge jacket, waistcoat, trousers, woolen pants, shirt, and a woolen vest. And when they looked at his jacket, he had an exact mark on the outside of his clothes to the kind of the abdomen area where he was stabbed. There was also blood on the prisoner's waistcoat as well. So that probably was when he was probably from the slash or something like that. Although, if I remember correctly, his landlady said that he... Don't forget, this is like... You probably go into your wardrobe and you probably see loads of clothes and you probably go, which clothes shall I wear today? But when you go back almost a century, or in this case more than a century, people don't have a lot of selections of clothes. They tend to have, you have a good one and a bad one. And you have good one that you save for Sunday best when you go to church, and you have your regular clothes that you wear throughout the day. If you're lucky, you might have a spare set of clothes as well. So... Hence, his waistcoat is quite tatty. Hence, it's already got cuts in it. Hence, it's already been stitched up by the landlady before. And she did admit that she did see what she thought was bloodstains on it a couple of months ago. But if you consider the fact that he is a cook, might not be human blood. It could be animal blood. So there we go. There we go. I think that's it, folks. I think that's it. Yeah, I think that's it. I need to go to the coffee shop. Coffee shop, as my gran used to say. Coffee shop. Let's do the quiz questions. And then I'm gonna have a carrot. Ooh, Michael, your life is so exciting. Yes, I know. You're eating a carrot. Whoa. That's what I do in the mornings to speed up my metabolism. Is after I've had my porridge with all nuts and berries and all that on there. All the good stuff that you need to have in there. Then throughout the morning, every hour, I'll have a carrot, as that speeds up my metabolism by eating every hour. So therefore, I don't have to have lunch by the time lunch comes around, because I've already got food in my tum-tum. And therefore, by the time I have my dinner around 6 o'clock, that digests quite quickly. So, because you shouldn't eat too late as well. And then in the evening, just to treat myself, I have some plain rice crackers. Do you know what? Weirdly, I really like them. I quite look forward to them. I quite look forward to my little carrot as well. Not my little carrot. Eva looks forward to my little carrot. Well, hey! There you go. Smut. So let's do the quiz questions. Let's see how many you got. Question number one. What job did Edward do? He was a superintendent at the Hippodrome. Hippodrome, if you go to Leicester Square, it's still there. It's on the corner of Charing Cross Road. Question number two, what job did James do? James was also a superintendent at the Hippodrome. That's how most of them knew each other. Question number three, how many years out of seven had Edward spent in prison? Four. So given the fact that from the age of 18, he'd spent 4 of 7 years out of his adult life out of prison, you would think you'd just not be a criminal. You'd think to yourself, well, if you spend that much time in prison, you're clearly shit at being a criminal. So why not just go straight? Why not just get a regular job? And then you don't have to embarrass yourself by going out going, yeah, I did a four stretch. I always find that fascinating when people waffle on about, they go, yeah, I came out of prison, I did a four stretch. And you just go, yeah, but what's impressive about that? You got caught. You did proven that you're a bit of a prick, that you're not particularly good at being a criminal, that you're not particularly intelligent, that you got easily caught. It's just like, surely a proper criminal is someone who's never ended up in prison because they're more skilled than you. If you end up in prison, you're just basically saying to people, I'm shit at being a criminal. Go straight, fuck's sake. Question number four. What job did Edward Lynch do? He was a tailor. Oh, coughing. Question number five. How many pints do we know that Edward drank that night? Three pints, and then he was acting like a massive prick. Three pints. Not 10, not 5, 3 pints. I mean, even 5, come on. 5's not a lot, but Jesus Christ, 3 pints. And he had to have a fight with someone, and then he had to accost a young lady who was defending her young sister behind her. What a turd. What a massive turd. I'm sure he's bigged it up and gone, I had to get in there because, I'm a criminal, innit? I'm a bad boy, innit? Yeah. Turd. Question number six. How did Edward describe Freddie Hopkins? He described him as a fat bastard. There you go. Enjoy that. Question number seven. What hospital were both men taken to? It was Charing Cross Hospital. Question number eight. What street did Raphael live on? It was Arthur Street. Arthur. Question number nine. What was the name of Raphael's landlady? It was Racina Martin. And question number 10, what language did the inspector think that the Italian spoke? French. What an idiot. What a massive idiot. So there you go, a story about idiots. Hey, can life get any better? A story about massive idiots who are just incompetent and effing stupid and ballsing stuff up because they haven't got the brain power to go, do you know what? I'm not going to fight. I don't need to fight. I just need to go out and have a good time and then go home and say, oh, I had a good time, and then go to bed, probably have a little Tom Tank, and then wake up in the morning and go, oh, I'm not in a prison cell. But obviously, some people can't do that. Some people are just fucking idiots. So that's a word of the wise, folks. Don't be a fucking idiot. So that's it. Yeah, I think that's done. So next week, another one-parter that's ready to go. And that'll take us through to the end of the year. We'll end with a three-parter. If I might do something over Christmas. I haven't quite decided yet, but there we go. So I hope you enjoyed that. Thank you very much for supporting the show. It's very much appreciated. If you enjoy the show, don't forget to leave a little review and say, I enjoyed this show. It's worth 5 stars. Thank you very much, Michael, for your free entertainment. Or you can join Patreon, that's all good, or share it. If you want to support the show, share it with your friends. Say, like, post something and say, hey people, I really enjoyed this show, you should give it a go as well if you like true crime. So there you go, that's me done. Have yourself a good what, I don't know what I'm saying now. I should just end this. Have yourself a good day and things and doodah, and sleep well. Sleep well only if you're going to bed. And catch you soon. Stay safe. Lots of love, people. Okay. Bye. 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 Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.